Audrey nodded. We are going to the conciergerie at 10, but before that, are you busy? Only a person like Audrey could make plans before 10 in the morning and expect other people to have plans too. I don't know. Maybe I'll be eating? I want to show you something. Her face was lit up like she had a big secret. Will you meet me in the lobby at 8:30? I shrugged. Sure. Great. She grinned, and then she and Bryn turned as the elevator returned with a soft ding. They held the door for me, and I shook my head. I hate elevators, I said. I'm claustrophobic. Oh, okay, Audrey said. See you in the morning. When they were gone, I stood there for a moment, wondering what had made me spit out one of my deepest secrets to people who were basically strangers, when in 8 months I'd never found the right moment to say it aloud to Hannah and Peely. The next morning, I went down for breakfast at 8 and found Audrey already there. Because there was no way not to, I joined her at her little table, and we ate our chocolate croissants together. What am I going to do without French food? She asked, taking a big bite of the pastry. I wonder if you could melt a Hershey's Kiss on a regular croissant, I said. Blasphemy, Audrey laughed. Not the same at all. She refused to say a word about the mysterious place she wanted to take me, even when we were on our way there. All she would tell me was that she'd spotted it the day before, when the group was walking back to the hotel. We crossed the river and walked through the streets near Notre Dame, where the buildings were elaborately trimmed with stone and iron scrollwork. It's unbelievable, I said, gazing up at a doorway adorned with carvings of lions. It's like somebody decided to take the time to make every single part beautiful. They were artisans, Audrey said. They'd rather not build something at all than make it ugly. She snapped photos and occasionally took out a small brown notebook and made a note or a sketch. Ugh, I said. I keep forgetting to send my mother a postcard. She's going to kill me. Get one now, Audrey said. You can buy a stamp at the hotel and mail it this afternoon. So we stopped at a tiny storefront, and I combed through the racks of postcards. I found one from Mom that was a photo of Notre Dame. Then I found one with a picture of the Paris city skyline for my father, figuring I could write something clever on it about New York. Oh, look, Audrey said, pulling a card off the rack. Wow. I leaned in to see the picture, and then did a double take. It was a painting of a woman sitting on a bench by a little pond. But not just any woman. It was me. Or rather, it was the not-me me I kept seeing in place of my own reflection. The same light hair, done up in an elaborate twist and covered in powder. The same full lips and wide blue eyes. It's crazy, Audrey said. She looks just like you. Do you see it? I couldn't answer. I turned the card over to read the caption, which was written in French and English. One of the many portraits preserved at the Royal Palace at Versailles. La Duchesse, painted by Diego Rostano, circa 1786. I remembered the old lady back at Versailles taking my photo and saying I was the girl from the picture. This must have been the picture she meant. So I wasn't just inventing this woman, dreaming her up. She was, or had been, real. Alive. Long ago. Are you going to buy it? Audrey asked. I forced a smile and slid the card back into its slot. No, I said. I don't need any more postcards. I don't need that woman staring at me from my carry-on for the rest of the trip, is what I really meant. We kept walking, my thoughts racing, until finally Audrey stopped on a street corner. "There it is," she said, pointing. I stared at a tile set into the stone wall of a building. It was streaked with lines from centuries of rain, the carving on its surface rounded and softened with age. But the design was unmistakable. It was the key. The key with the cornflower in it. I gasped. My hand automatically went to the neckline of my shirt, which the medallion was tucked behind. But something, a sudden shy feeling, stopped me just short of pulling it out. "It's the thing from your necklace." Grinning, Audrey reached into her bag for her travel journal and opened it, revealing the page on which she'd originally sketched my medallion. Next to it, in pencil, was a sketch of the tile. "We passed by here yesterday, and it jumped out at me." "What is this building?" I asked, stepping back and looking up at it. It was 3 stories tall, with wrought iron balconies and a steeply sloping metal roof. "It looks like they sell camping supplies," she said, studying the sign hanging down. "But sometimes they have signs saying what they used to be." We walked from one edge of the structure to the other, but found nothing. "Let's go inside and ask," Audrey said. "It's 9:15, but we can still make it back in time if we hurry."
"Are you sure?" I said. "I mean, I could always come back."
"But this is important," she said, reaching for the door. "How do you know?" I asked. "I mean, it's important to you, right?"
"Oh, well, yeah, kind of."
"So we'll go in." We walked up to the counter. "Parlez-vous anglais?" Audrey asked. The clerk, a guy in his late 20s, made an uncertain face.
"No so good."
In his halting English and our halting French, we quickly established that he knew absolutely nothing about the building's history. Audrey showed him the photograph she'd taken of the tile, and he shook his head. Another employee, a girl who was apparently bored, came over. The clerk showed her the picture of the key, and they spoke to each other in French. I didn't understand a single word they said, until I heard the girl say,
"Le clé."
"Excusez-moi," I said.
"Le clé?
Who is that?" The clerk gently turned Audrey's camera so I could see the screen and pointed at the image.
"La clé," he said slowly.
"The key," Audrey said. "Clé means key." Suddenly, the female employee's face brightened.
"La ordre de la clé."
"What does that mean?" I asked.
"The order of the key?" Audrey said. The girl cast a glance around the empty store, said something to the guy in French, and then beckoned to me and Audrey.
"Come."
A mix of anticipation and uncertainty simmered in my stomach as she led us through a door marked
Entrée interdite.
We passed through a stockroom and made a left turn. There was an old wooden door tucked behind a pair of bikes, which the girl moved out of the way. She reached for the doorknob and yanked on it, hard, until it opened with a loud screech. She held up a hand, telling us to wait, and darted away, returning a minute later with a camping flashlight still in its package. She flipped the light on and went through the door.
"Attention," she called.
"Be careful." Just inside the door was a rather steep stone stairway. I hesitated. Already my heart was beating faster. Audrey looked at me.
"Are you okay? I can go down and see what it is if you want."
I looked down the steps into the gaping darkness.
I hated to send someone else to do my dirty work. Audrey didn't seem to mind, though. She descended halfway and stopped.
It's dark, but it's not small, if that helps.
It did. I could handle the dark, as long as I knew the walls weren't pressing in on me. The echoes of our footsteps off the room's distant edges made me feel better. We were standing in a cellar of some sort. The store didn't appear to use it for anything, although when the girl swept her flashlight across the walls, I saw a collection of old brooms and a beat-up metal trash can.
Aha!
The girl's triumphant exclamation reverberated around us.
Ici! Here!
Audrey and I came up behind her and looked at the spot on the wall illuminated by her light.
Oh,
Audrey said softly. It was an engraved metal sign. At the top was the key design. Under that, it read, L'Ordre de la Clé, Roman numeral MDCCLXXXI, en service éternel à Sa Majesté la Reine.
What year is that?
I whispered, trying to remember my Roman numerals.
1,500, 200, L is 50, right? Plus 31.
Audrey sighed an amazed little sigh.
1781, in eternal service of Her Majesty the Queen.
The Queen, Queen? I asked, my pulse quickening.
Let's see, Audrey said. In 1781, that would have been Marie Antoinette.
Wow. I couldn't even speak. So, Le Clay wasn't a person, it was an organization. And now I knew for certain. It had something to do with me, and with the Duke in the portrait, and with Armand, and with Marie Antoinette. The girl was smiling at us. Clearly, she'd gotten the reaction she was looking for. Audrey took out her camera.
The Order of the Key. So whoever they were devoted to the Queen.
But the Queen died in the Revolution, I said.
Yeah.
Audrey started taking photos.
A lot of people died in the Revolution. Probably these key people, too.
The girl who worked at the store wandered around the perimeter of the room, inspecting the walls with interest.
Come, she said. Come, see, more.
She stood with her flashlight pointed to another metal tile. The key symbol was at the top, and beneath that was a list of words. I knelt down to look at them. They were names. Dubois, Beauclair, Vauquelin, Roux, Janvier, and Iselin. Chapter 12. We had to book it to the hotel to meet our group by 10 o'clock. The whole way back, my thoughts were swirling. Had my family, the Icelands, really been members of this mysterious order? With Armand's family? The idea of having something in common with a person as awe-inspiring as Armand made me feel electrified. In the lobby, Madame Mitchell did a double take when she saw me.
I thought you all weren't feeling well this morning.
Oh, I said. I don't know. I'm fine.
I guess it's just Hannah and Pilar, then.
The look on her face told me she knew Hannah and Peely were lying, but also that she didn't really care. I guess after teaching overprivileged girls for 20 years, you've pretty much heard it all. I kind of didn't care either. If they wanted to sleep through the entire trip, that was their business. Jules arrived, and we began our walk. I didn't want to seem clingy, so I stayed at the back of the group. Finally, I fell into step beside him.
Hey, I said.
Good morning,
he said. How are you?
I'm really sorry about yesterday, at the Basilique. Hannah was... she just wasn't thinking.
That is not your fault. You don't need to apologize.
I feel like I should, I said. I hope you don't think they represent all of us. He turned to me, a small smile playing on his lips.
I don't think that at all.
I couldn't keep the smile from my face.
Okay, then.
I was on the verge of telling him what we'd learned about the Order of the Key when Madame Mitchell turned and yoo-hooed at him, and he had to excuse himself and walk away. A little fountain of happiness sprang up inside me, and I couldn't keep the smile off my face. We bought our tickets and then went across a massive walled courtyard into La Conciergerie.
During the Revolution, this was a notorious prison, Jules announced as we stood inside the vaulted room where huge stone pillars and arching stone beams braced the ceiling. Many historical figures were held here prior to their executions, including Marie Antoinette, Madame du Barry, and Robespierre. Now, most of the building is used for judicial purposes.
All I heard was Marie Antoinette. We walked through a hall filled with examples of 18th-century prison cells.
Kind of tight, Audrey said, as we peered into a room that couldn't have been bigger than about 6 feet by 6 feet, with a rough wooden bench that served as a bed.
Yeah, Bryn said. Not the ideal place to spend a weekend.
Or the last few months of your life, Jules said, coming up behind us.
Did Marie Antoinette have to stay in a room like this? I asked, sort of appalled. I mean, she was the queen. You'd think they'd have given her a little extra space.
No. Her cell was larger, but not very much larger. You will see a representation of it farther along on the tour.
I noticed that he stayed with us as we passed the other rooms, which were full of janky-looking mannequins that Bryn made hilarious comments about. But we all fell silent as we crossed into the recreation of Marie Antoinette's cell. A shudder passed through my body as I looked at the items displayed behind glass. A rug. A cup. A water pitcher. Things the queen had actually held and used while she had been locked up, separated from her husband and children, waiting to die. The room was larger than the other cells, but compared to the grand opulence of Versailles, Marie must have thought she was losing her mind. She had a small bed and a desk, with a short privacy screen to shield her from the view of the guards who were always sitting a few feet away. I started to back away from the display, my palms growing sweaty. To live there, to be stuck there, knowing you were going to die, but not knowing what had become of your children.
This is what you get when you tell people to eat cake, Bryn said.
Marie Antoinette never said that, Jules said. It's a famous misrepresentation. Actually, she was not even the first person accused of having said it.
Then why did people believe it? I asked. He shrugged.
She was raised in utter luxury as an archduchess, and then became a queen at a young age. She was spoiled and probably thoughtless in many ways, but I don't think she was bad in the way that an evil person might be called bad. She was devoted to charities, and she was a good mother who loved her children very much. But the people wanted to hate her.
Why? I asked.
They needed a symbol, he said. Somewhere to project their frustration. Marie Antoinette was a foreigner. She was born in Austria, she was independent, and she had extravagant taste. But she was falsely accused of many things, and often used as
a scapegoat? I suggested.
Jules' confused face was seriously cute.
A what kind of goat?
Scapegoat. It means someone you blame when things aren't good.
Then, yes, she was a goat.
At the far end of the hallway was a small square room lined with benches. Every wall had a sign on it, filled with columns of names of prisoners held there during the revolution. I went straight to the eyes, steeling myself for the sight of one or more Icelands on the list. My own relatives, horribly condemned to die. But I didn't find any Icelands. And when I looked for Armand's family, the Janviers, I didn't find any of them. I tapped Audrey on the shoulder.
Do you still have the pictures you took this morning?
She started scrolling back through her camera.
Yeah. Oh, are you checking the names?
I nodded, and then we went down the list together, looking for the rest of the families. Beauclair, Dubois, Rue, and Vauclin. But we didn't find any of them.
What do you think it means? I asked.
Audrey shrugged.
That they were lucky?
Still, I found it weird that out of literally thousands of people, six whole families had escaped the guillotine entirely. And they just happened to be the same six families who were in the Order of the Key together. We trailed down the hallway to the final room on the tour, a memorial chapel.
This room was actually the Queen's cell, Jules said. It was turned into a memorial 23 years after she died, by King Louis XVIII.
The chapel was beautiful, with a real altar and everything. It was dark and quiet, small, but not suffocating. On one side was a portrait of Marie Antoinette dressed all in black. On the other was a small table. As I turned to go back to the main room, I froze. Standing directly across from me was the Queen. She stared at me, her eyes burning with the same intensity I'd seen at Le Hameau. In the dimly lit room, she almost seemed to give off a light of her own, a ghostly light.
No, I don't believe in ghosts.
And then a tourist took a step toward the altar and walked right through the Queen's enormous skirt. I staggered backward, running into a woman who said,
"Watch out, hun,"
in a thick Texan accent. By the time I got my feet back under me, the ghost, or whatever she was, had disappeared. Audrey was by my side.
"Are you okay?"
I wanted to nod, but I was too freaked out. Fortunately, Audrey just assumed I was having a claustrophobic meltdown.
"Come on, let's go sit. It's a little stuffy in here."
She guided me back out to a bench in the hallway. We sat for a couple of minutes, and I tried to force myself to take slow, even breaths. The thought kept sliding back into my head that I should feel better. But then it was run over by the giant, screeching fact that I'd seen a ghost. An actual ghost. I'd come so close to convincing myself that I'd been wrong about what I experienced at Versailles. But there was no denying it any longer. She really was a ghost. My stomach turned over with a flop. I rested my head in my hands.
"You really don't seem okay," Audrey said.
"I think I really might not be," I said. Her voice was calm, but I could hear the anxiety she was trying to cover up.
Should I get Madame Mitchell?
Do you need a doctor or something? I tried to swallow the thickness in my throat, but found that it wouldn't go away. Then I tried to tell Audrey that I was fine, but I couldn't say the words.
Let's go outside and get some actual fresh air, Audrey said. Wait here for a second.
As if I could go anywhere. When she came back, Bryn was with her.
Is it a panic attack?
Bryn asked.
My mom gets panic attacks.
Can you walk?
Audrey asked. No, I said. I mean, yes, I can walk. No, it's not a panic attack. I don't think. Was it still called a panic attack when there was something actually worth panicking about? Somehow, I got to my feet, and we walked all the way back to the exit and emerged into the courtyard. A light, chilled rain had begun to fall. Instantly, I felt better. Not 100%, but I could breathe again. Bryn and Audrey watched me as I stood in the rain, enjoying the cool mistiness and swallowing the sweet, fresh air. After a minute, I turned back to them.
Better?
Audrey asked. Way better, I said. Thank you. Of course. She made a face like thanking her was kind of dumb.
Do you want to go back to the hotel?
I can skip the Champs-Élysées. It's just shopping. Maybe that would be a good idea. Spending a whole afternoon surrounded by stuff I couldn't afford wasn't quite as bad as being stalked by a ghost, but it was close. I'm sure I can get there by myself. Bryn pretended to be shocked.
Without your buddy?
I half smiled. I guess I'll find Madame Mitchell and tell her. She shrugged.
It's easier to apologize afterward than get permission before, right? We'll tell her you left. We tried to make her stay, but she karate chopped us. Who knew Colette was secretly a ninja?
I grinned.
You'll take a taxi, though?
Audrey asked. I'm okay to walk, I said. I promise.
Here. Audrey dug through her backpack. Take my umbrella.
She insisted, so I took the tiny umbrella she offered. I still got wet, but it didn't matter. The rain made the city seem even more romantic. The people pulling their coat collars up and hunching under overhangs and striped awnings, and the gleam from the headlights on the wet cobblestones. But even as I took in the loveliness around me, my thoughts were occupied with the ghost. What I needed was to figure out why I was seeing her, when obviously no one else was. Did I just happen to be visiting places that were significant to her, or was she following me? Was it because of the order of the key? It couldn't be a coincidence that my ancestors had been closely connected to the queen, and now I was seeing her ghost around Paris. That made me wonder, would Armand be able to see her? The trouble was, to ask him, I'd need his phone number. I couldn't exactly ask Hannah for it. In the penthouse, Pilar let me in, and then drifted back to the couch where she was reading a fashion magazine. The shower was running in Hannah's room. This was my chance. Have you seen my turquoise scarf? I asked. Peely looked up and shook her head. Did Hannah borrow it? I turned to look at the closed bedroom door. I told her she could.
Go check, Pilar said. She just got in the shower. She won't care.
I nodded and opened Hannah's door, my heart pounding. Her stuff was strewn everywhere, but I found her phone charging on her nightstand. I scrolled through her texts. There were about 6 in a row sent to Armand, unanswered. It was a huge difference from the way Hannah usually was with boys. She was the cat, and the boys were the mice, getting batted around for fun. With Armand, she was a tiny white mouse,
sending unanswered mouse texts to the big old cat. I wrote down his phone number on a piece of hotel stationery and crammed it into my pocket, then returned the phone to the nightstand and went back out to the living room.
"Did you find it?" Pilar asked.
It took me a second to remember that I was supposed to be looking for my scarf. "No," I said. "It must be somewhere in my suitcase."
"Oh," she said.
"I'm going to run downstairs and grab a sandwich. Are you good?" She nodded, her eyes drawn back to her magazine.
"Do you really think people are going to be wearing a lot of olive green this summer? They keep saying so, but honestly, I don't see it happening."
"Sorry," I said.
"I don't know."
I slipped out the door and down to the lobby courtesy phone. I dialed Armand's number and got his voicemail.
"It's Colette," I said. "Please call me at the Hotel Odette. I have a crazy question for you."
Back in the room, Hannah was in a rage because Armand hadn't returned her calls or texts. Trying to avoid attracting her attention, I changed out of my rained-on clothes and borrowed Peely's laptop to see if I could find anything online about the order of the key. But every lead took me to a dead end. There were offhand mentions of the various families, usually in the context of accompanying the king on a diplomatic trip or being present at the signing of a treaty or whatever, but nothing that linked them together, and nothing at all that linked them to the queen. At dinner time, Hannah declared that she was going to order room service and watch the DVDs she'd brought from home. Pilar ordered from room service too, but I said I'd go down to the cafe and grab some food.
"It's all the same food," Hannah said scornfully.
"It's not the same at all," I thought. "It's free." I endured her eye rolls and made it to the cafe just as the waiters were making their rounds.
"Colette, over here."
Audrey waved to me from the small table where she and Bryn were sitting. I wove through the tables and stood behind one of the chairs.
"Are you alone?" Bryn asked. "Sit with us."
"Yeah," I said. "But I'm not eating here. I'm going to get my food to go." I ignored their quizzical expressions but pulled a chair out and sat down.
"I love that dress," Bryn said. "Is it vintage?"
I nodded. I was wearing a simple black and white rayon dress, loosely cut, with buttons down the front, and over it, a short, structured black jacket. I'd found both of them at the thrift store. What Bryn, or Hannah or Pilar, didn't know is that my so-called vintage clothes weren't designer vintage. Most of them had labels from brands my friends would never be caught dead in.
"It must be so fun to shop with you," Bryn said. "Like a treasure hunt."
"I hate shopping," Audrey said. "I just wear whatever my grandmother buys me. Except the dresses. I have like 15 dresses in my closet gathering dust."
"I walk into the Gap, find a mannequin I like, and buy everything the mannequin is wearing," Bryn said. "Bah, bah."
"If I could figure out how to dress like Colette, I would try harder," Audrey said. "But what's the point? And I don't want to end up looking like I obeyed the corporate mall overlords. No offense, Bryn."
Bryn laughed.
"I welcome the guidance of our evil corporate overlords."
"It's not that complicated," I said. "You just follow your instincts." Audrey sighed. "Easy for you to say. My fashion instincts are defective. I don't know the first thing about what color goes with what pattern or whatever."
"I could help you sometime," I said, without meaning to.
"Really?"
Audrey was looking at me like I'd offered her a pony.
"That would be really cool. It would make my mom's entire year."
I shrugged.
but inside I was already wondering, A, what I'd just done, and B, how to get out of it. Before I could say anything else, the waiter came to take our orders. I asked for a ham and cheese quiche, and then Audrey started talking about French food, and nobody said anything else about clothes. I was halfway through my meal before I remembered that I was supposed to be going back to the suite to eat with Hannah and Peely. I stopped short, my fork hovering in midair.
"What's wrong?" Audrey asked. "You look like you just saw a ghost or something."
I was supposed to get this to go, I said. I totally forgot.
"That's not a big deal, though, is it?" Bren asked.
"Hannah's in a bad mood already," I said, starting to stand.
"At least finish eating," Bren said. "She's got Pilar in her clutches. She can't be mad that you ate dinner, can she?"
I didn't answer. But not answering felt like making a giant confession about my friendship with Hannah. Bren and Audrey exchanged a quick glance, and that one little moment contained an eternity of shame and humiliation for me. A warmth spread up through my face, and I hoped the lights were too low for them to see me blushing.
"Colette, don't take this the wrong way."
Audrey spoke slowly, cautiously.
"But do you really need Hannah in your life?"
The warmth reached my ears and turned to heat.
"She's my friend," I said. "I know she's a little high maintenance sometimes, but you don't ditch people based on little flaws." "Hannah would," Bren said shortly.
Audrey gave Bren a look.
"Colette's right. You have to decide how much you're going to put up with."
I couldn't bring myself to make eye contact with either of them.
"Thanks for letting me sit with you. I'd better get back upstairs."
I left my plate of half-eaten food and walked out of the cafe. But I made it only halfway to the stairs before someone moved into my path.
"Bonsoir,"
Armand said, smiling down at me. I took a step back, Peely's warning echoing in my head.
"Hannah's upstairs," I said.
"I am not here to see Hannah," he purred. "You called me, so I came."
I stood up straighter, not letting my guard down for a millisecond.
"You could have called me back, you know, on a phone."
"It is time to tell you about Leclerc."
He gently took hold of my arm.
"It will be better to do it face to face."
I looked up at him warily. "Like, really, tell me, or just drop a bunch of mysterious hints?" His laugh echoed off the lobby walls. One of the girls at the reception desk glanced up in curiosity and then popped to attention when she saw him. You couldn't blame her. He looked like a movie star.
"No hints," he said. "I will tell you everything I know."
I sighed. If Hannah came downstairs, I'd be in huge trouble. But what were the chances of that happening? Still, I nudged him toward a little sitting area that wasn't visible from the elevators. 5 minutes, I said. I have to get back to Hannah.
"Don't worry about her," he said. "I will deal with that later. So, what do you know about the order?"
I told him about finding the building and the names on the engraved plaques in the basement. "I guess that means our families knew each other."
"They were very rich, very powerful, and very closely tied together," he said. "They knew each other intimately."
The sound of the word intimately in his French accent sent shivers through me.
But that was more than 200 years ago. What difference does it make now? I asked. Armand clasped his hands, interweaving his fingers.
We are bound together. Our families are linked, and we can preserve that. We need to claim our birthright, and we must all act together to do so.
What do you mean, claim our birthright? He unclasped his fingers and relaxed.
I did some research on you. Your father is Leo Iselin, heir of the Iselin estate, and the rightful owner of the title of Duke de Broyer.
Wait, my dad a duke? Seriously? What did that make me? I guessed it made Mom a duchess, or ex-duchess. And since titles seemed to travel down the male side of the family, it made Charlie a duke, too. I remembered the postcard with a picture of the woman who looked like me, the one the caption had called the Duchess. Did that mean she was an ancestor of mine? I was in a daze. This would be seriously impressive to Hannah and Pilar. My mind began to trace the paths of all the fabulous possibilities that lay ahead of me. Spending the summer in Manhattan and having the paparazzi follow me around. My picture on celebrity websites. La Duchesse de Broglie made an appearance at a charity event last night, wearing vintage Chanel. Being the it girl, for once. Instead of the it girl's struggling backup friend. Maybe they'd even find some way to make a big deal out of me at the Versailles party. Except, does France even have dukes anymore? I asked.
No. But that is an unfortunate technicality. One that we can fix.
He leaned forward.
My father is working very hard to restore my family's title. And if we can gather the members of Le Clay, we have that much more advantage.
But why? I asked. Who cares? He snorted.
I care. And you should care. It's about prestige and pride in your family's history. Your mother could be La Duchesse de Broglie.
I wondered if the customers at Macy's would be impressed that La Duchesse de Broglie was ringing up their perfume for them.
We are special, he said, grabbing my arm. We must return to the glory our families once possessed. La noblesse ancienne.
I had the sense to pull away. And what about the queen? I asked. He stared at me.
What do you mean? Why do you ask?
Because the order was in the eternal service of the queen, Marie Antoinette. For the first time since I'd met him, Armand seemed ill at ease. He sat back and looked at me as if he was making up his mind about something.
How do you know this?
Because it's what the plaque said. That's why the symbol has the cornflower in the key shape. It was her favorite flower. Armand shook his head. What? I asked. What's wrong? Had the queen appeared to him too? Was he just hesitant to say it for the same reason I was? Because it sounded crazy? I decided to take a chance. Have you seen anything unusual lately?
Oui.
His eyes flashed, and he looked around like he wanted to make sure no one was watching us. Then he rolled up his right sleeve.
This was on my arm when I awoke today.
I looked down at his right forearm. On it was a dark mark, about 2 inches long. It was smudgy, but I didn't have to use my imagination to figure out what it was. A key, with cornflower-shaped cutouts.
"Is that a tattoo?" I asked.
"You can see it?"
He stared at his arm.
"I don't know what it is, but no one else can see it."
"Where did it come from?" I asked.
"I do not know. Do you have one?"
I shook my head, but he reached over and pulled up my sleeve for confirmation. All that was visible was my winter pale arm. But had he seen the ghost? Or a slightly different version of his own face staring back at him in mirrors? Was there a portrait at Versailles of a man who resembled Armand?
"Perhaps yours will come soon," he said. "But now you understand that what I am saying is real and important. Don't you see, Colette? It means we are truly connected."
The air in the lobby seemed warm, and I began to feel dizzy. Almost like one of my claustrophobic episodes, except it was from the thoughts closing in on my head. Maybe Armand was special. Maybe I was even special. But my family couldn't even come together for dinner. So how were we supposed to fight for anything? Clearly, Armand assumed my dad had tons of money, more than enough to lead the crusade to restore our, what did he call it? Noblesse ancienne? I opened my mouth to start explaining when I felt a hand on my shoulder, pressing down with more intensity than seemed necessary.
"Well, hello," Hannah said. "What am I missing?"
My blood went cold. I looked up into her icy green eyes and knew that I was in seriously dangerous territory. I pulled my arm out of Armand's grasp.
"Nothing," I said. "We were waiting for you to bring your food back," she said, a psychotic-sounding little chirp in her voice. "And I got a strange feeling, so I decided to come check on you."
Somehow, while saying this, she managed to wedge herself between us.
"I ran into Colette outside the cafe," Armand said. "I was just about to call you."
"How nice that you two could spend some time together," she said coolly. "Alone."
Armand didn't even blink.
"Yes, it has been nice."
Hannah shot me a look that would have turned a fireball into a lump of ice.
"I can't wait to hear all about it, Colette."
Armand grabbed her around the waist and pulled her down to sit on his knee.
"Oh, you don't want to hear it. To be honest, even I was getting bored. We were just talking about our families."
Hannah, thrilled by his affectionate gesture, took the bait. "Your families?"
"Oh, yes," he said. "Didn't you know? Colette's family is one of the oldest and most influential in France."
"Really?"
she asked, shooting me a curious look.
"No, I didn't know that."
"She outranks us all."
"Rank?"
Hannah's gaze lingered on me for a moment. Then she turned back to Armand.
"What's your rank?"
"Well, it's very complicated. But one day, I will be the Duc de Valois."
And boom, Hannah was hooked. Her eyes went wide and starry, and I knew she was imagining her future life as La Duchesse de Valois. I took the opportunity to escape.
"Okay, cool. See you guys later."
Armand shuffled Hannah to the side and stood up,
reaching for my hand and kissing it with exaggerated courtesy.
We will talk again soon.
Maybe.
We are bound, Colette.
Armand looked right into my eyes.
We are bound by blood.
I broke away and practically ran for the staircase. When I reached the suite, Pilar let me in and asked if I'd seen Hannah. I nodded, breathless, and flopped down on the couch. Suddenly, the fact that I'd kept all of my stuff neatly packed in my suitcase seemed like a good idea, because I had a feeling that when Hannah got back, I'd be kicked out of the penthouse and left to sleep in the hallway. Finally, the door opened. I braced myself.
Bonsoir, mes amis,
Hannah trilled. She wafted into the room and sank down next to me on the sofa.
Colette, why didn't you say anything? This is such a huge deal.
I guess I didn't really know, I said. What on earth had Armand said to her? What's a huge deal? Pilar asked. Hannah ignored her.
Armand said that technically the title would pass to the male heir, but that since it's modern day, you could potentially contest Charlie's right to. It's not that simple, I said.
Did he tell you that titles don't exist anymore in France?
He said he's working to bring them back and that you were going to help, and I told him I'd help too. I'd make Dad let me go to school here, and then I could do whatever he needs me to do.
Also, I said, why would I fight my own brother to steal a title from him? She laughed.
All you ever do is fight with your brother, Colette. Why not do it over something important for a change?
Peely's head went back and forth like she was watching a tennis match. I'm still majorly confused, by the way.
Just think, Hannah said dreamily, the low lamplight casting a golden glow on her pale skin as she rested her head on my shoulder. We'll be duchesses together.
Chapter 13. My head hurts. I'm sweating. I try to move, but I feel sluggish, heavy. It takes me 2 tries to get to my feet. And then something is dragging me down, like a 50-pound weight harnessed to my shoulders and hips. The room I'm crossing is full of people. Soft music plays. But I can't see the musicians because I'm holding a fan in front of my face. I pause in front of a mirror and steal a glance at myself. My wig is a monstrous mass of curls and bows and powder. That's why my head hurts. And the weight pulling me down? It's a dress of dove gray taffeta that grips me around the waist like a boa constrictor and then explodes out from my hips. It's midsummer, and the room feels stiflingly hot, especially as I'm wrapped in 15 layers of fabric. I just want to find the exit and escape out into the evening air. But I can't. There's someone I need to talk to. I scan the room over the top of my fan, and I can tell something is wrong. Though we're gathered for a small party, the mood is tense. The guests are pretending to be festive, but something is off. I keep walking. I bump into a servant girl with my skirt, and she turns to me and blushes.
Pardon, madame, she says, curtsying.
Then people clear out of my way, and I find the person I'm looking for. A woman who reclines on a chaise, her head held high,
her large eyes surveying the room with what I know is feigned interest. Her gown is the finest pale pink silk, with delicate tufts of silk flowers sewn onto it. It rests low on her shoulders. Around her neck, she wears the most fragile-looking silver chain. And from the chain hangs a medallion.
I woke in a cold sweat to sunlight peeping in through the closed curtains. I had an unsettled, unrested feeling, like I'd hardly gotten any sleep at all. I'd been dreaming, but I couldn't remember the details. Only that there was something I'd been trying to do, and I hadn't been able to do it. The frustration lingered as I lay on the sofa bed and stared up at the crystal chandelier, running through last night's talk with Armand. Even if I were a duchess, it wouldn't make a huge difference in my life, would it? I thought about Dad and how status-conscious he is. He'd jump at the chance to be the Duke de Broglie. And then I started to daydream about how maybe dukes weren't allowed to be divorced, and he'd have to come crawling back to Mom and beg her to be his duchess. And then we could all spend the summer in New York together. One clear advantage of being part of France's noblesse ancienne, it made Hannah treat me like someone who approached being her equal. So I hadn't heard another word about not coming back up for dinner, or even about my unplanned meetup with Armand. When I heard Hannah's phone alarm go off, I got up and took a shower. I put on jeans and a vintage sweater I'd found at a thrift store. Dark blue, with a sequined dolphin on the front, and a pair of gray ankle boots. I gathered my hair into a ponytail and put on berry-colored lipstick and no other makeup. Pilar came out of her room. She'd toned everything down, from her just-bought-in-Paris Burberry moccasins all the way up to her hair, which lay in soft curls over her shoulders. She moved hesitantly.
"Hey! You look great," I said.
"Thanks." She relaxed. "I thought I'd try your style today. It's so fast." Hannah came out looking like her usual dress to the nines and made up to the